go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 94 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I am recording this episode 94, again, the B-Man being redundant, as the B-Man is, on Christmas Eve, 10 p.m., I think is the time right now. Yes, I am working, 10 p.m., Christmas Eve, when I should be celebrating the holiest day of the year, or evening, that is. My family is upstairs, so if you do hear some rumblings, that is them. I guess I don't have a real studio for this project. I'm a workaholic. I've recently figured that out or discovered that about me. Not the worst thing to be, so whatever. I was just at my sister's house, my oldest sister, Carrie. It's a generic name, so I'll say it. And I'm at the point now where I need to apologize to all my uncles and aunts, because when I was a toddler, a tyke, when I was a prepubescent and teenager and puberty and all that, I thought my aunts and uncles were so lame and boring, and they had nothing to talk with me about. Every time I would see them, same conversation. It was like, oh, they talk about the drive to our house and the weather, and then they would, oh, how's basketball doing? Because the B-Man, I played a lot of basketball, obviously. Look at the guns. I was a good 3-point shooter. Defense, I didn't really care if you blew by me and scored on me, because I'm a 3-point shooter. I scored. The babes love 3-pointers and dunks, and I couldn't dunk, so I learned to shoot 3-pointers, and I did not get any babes in high school or middle school. But anyways, yeah, that was how the conversations with all my relatives went. Was, how is basketball going? How you doing in school? What courses are you taking this semester? What are you going to do when you graduate? Now, I'm at my sister's house, and now I'm the old man. I'm the uncle, the out-of-touch uncle, who has a teeny, just a spray, a little sprinkle of racism and off-color jokes. That's kind of who I am. And now my nieces and nephews, who are all teenagers, early 20s, I don't know what to talk with them about. I am not going, so what are you going to do when you graduate? It's just, I have nothing to talk with them about. It's a very awkward situation for me. I get in my head, I'm like, well, I'm not talking enough. Do they think I'm in a bad mood? What do they think about the B-Man? Do they even like me? I want us all to love each other because we're family. And I will say, the key to a successful holiday with your family, don't drink and don't do drugs. Our family, we don't really do much drinking and hardly any drugs that I know of. So that's how we've always been able to remain a loving family. Even though we're loving, I do not know what to talk with any of them about, because I want to talk about smut and my dick. And how much can you really talk about dick with your family before they're like, all right, this is awkward AF, let's keep it going. So what I did for a present was I Venmo'd all of my nieces and nephews $50. Not cash, I just Venmo. Just easy while they're there. $50. Tell me if I'm wrong. I want to give my nieces and nephews enough money where it doesn't break me. And $50 doesn't break the B-Man, because we're very successful here at Verbal Graffiti. But I want to give them enough money where they don't consider me cheap, so that when I die tragically, which I think I will, they won't refer to me as the cheap uncle. And then when holidays come around, when I'm no longer around, they'll miss the money that I gave them. So I'm paying for I'm not paying for my nieces and nephews' love. I'm paying them so they won't consider me cheap. Because I do think they know I love them, but what's $20? When I was a kid, my uncles and aunts gave me $5, and I think it was bumped up to $10. But what with the economy, in this economy, yeah. So I give them $50. And same thing with weddings. I give $100, or if I have a plus one, which I hardly ever do, $200. I always give whatever the amount is so that the person I'm giving it to does not think I'm cheap. Same thing when I go out drinking or out to a restaurant, which, again, I hardly ever do. But if I'm buying a drink, I usually tip $2 now. I used to do $1, but, again, inflation. So, again, I'm not over-tipping because I am cheap. So when you're a cheap person, I'm trying to hide my cheapness, my frugality from the people that I associate with. So I'm giving just enough so that they don't talk shit about me when I leave. So hopefully I've left the Christmas Eve party. Hopefully my nieces and nephews are like, wow, our uncle's boring as fuck, but he ain't cheap. The B-man ain't cheap. $50, I don't know. Again, in our family, we have kind of a big family, so $50. Hopefully that's enough. So to my nieces and nephews, if that's not enough, go suck a fat one, because that's all I'm going to give you, $50. Hope everyone had a Merry Christmas. I will say, I noticed I do say I will say a lot. I've been making the rounds the last few days. I've been going to bars, going to friends' houses. I do go to a friend's house. All right, I walked into his house, and this is a theme in a lot of my friends' house. Now, do know that most of my friends are middle class, middle upper class, young kids, all college educated, white collar jobs, blah, blah, whatever, no one's doing anything really super fun with their lives, nor am I. But I go into their house, and prosaic. There's nothing in the house that's inspiring to me. Like, I look at the walls, and it's photos of the married couple, like my friend and his wife, then photos of their kids. And, you know, when you go out and get the professional photo where it's black and white, where the sun's hitting you at the right angle, and you're in some kind of apple orchard, even though I know nobody in the family eats apples. And I'm looking at all these photos. I'm like, well, yeah. Of course you're a friend. Like, you all live together. Like, if one of my friends, like, lived with a gal and three random kids, that would be why you would need pictures of all you on the wall to let us all know how you're associated together. But if you're married and you have whatever, 1, 2, 3 kids or dogs or pets, you don't need that many photos of yourself framed on an entire wall, like a collage of all of you. Like, yeah, we all know you're a loving family. You don't need 12 photos on one wall, like the side opposite the flat screen TV, to let all of us know that you're a loving family. Family, like that's excess to the B-man. What do you think? Let the B-man know down in the comments. All you really need is just one framed photo on a table or in a desk, you know, like on top of a kitchen table. Again, the B-man with all my hand, but, you know, just a couple framed photos. Let us know you care about your family. Anything more, when you're putting framed photos, professional photos on your wall, that, to me, that's what's prosaic. Like, that tells me that you didn't put any thought into the artwork or any, there's nothing in your life that is inspiring. It's just, oh, well, I'm just going to show my family. No artwork, you didn't even scroll through reels on Instagram for interior decorating. It's just, we'll just put photos of ourselves. It's like, you're not the royal family, right? The royal family should have photos of themselves and their lineage on all the walls and the hallways. If you have a normal size hallway, I mean, I don't know, 5-6 feet or, if you want a hallway that could be as large as a room, if you have that, if you have 15-foot wide hallways, yeah, you could have framed photos of your family, because you're probably royalty or very wealthy or a prestigious family within your community. If you just have normal hallways where there's like a hallway and you kind of bounce and the bathroom is like three steps from the bedroom, no photos of your families on any of the walls. Diplomas, artwork, where maybe you stole something from where you went on vacation. You go to vacation to Spain, so get something Spain-like to put on your wall. But these just photos of your family, it's just so prosaic. And then I'm going to my sister's house tonight, and all it is highway. You get off the highway. It's package store, which in Connecticut, that's what we call liquor stores. There's all these the doobie stores. That's what I'm calling marijuana now, because marijuana is too professional. And I don't really know the terminology because I don't really smoke all that often, hardly at all. So I don't really know the lingo. So I'm going with the doobie. And every time I've said, "You smoking a doobie?" my friends who do smoke laugh. They get a good giggle out of that. So you see all these smoke, the vape stores that with the weed and the doobies, and there's a pizza shops, and there's a Dunkin', and there's a Starbucks, there's a CVS, a Walgreens. You'll drive by a trailer park. You'll have a couple Italian restaurants, maybe a mini golf place. It's insipid. You drive around, you go in people's living rooms, it's just photos of their family, you drive down the street, it's a package store, it's a weed store, it's a pizza joint, it's a CVS, maybe a local drugstore. There's nothing, the architecture, there's nothing about it that stands out. There's nothing about one town to the next, nothing about it's memorable. We need to do better. I know we talk about this more in America, but that's culture. It's just we're going down the toilet bowl and nobody's cleaning the stains. Hope you all had a Merry Christmas. Let's move on to something I found on Reddit. This comes, and again, I have family upstairs. I am invading their space. So if you do hear some mumbling, that is them. And I'm being a little self-conscious right now because they're probably listening to what I'm saying. So hope they have their earbuds in. All right. Back to Verbal Graffiti, episode 94. I found this on the subreddit. Ask men advice. Am I a man? Let's find out. My boyfriend can't last in bed. My partner struggles to last more than 2 to 3 minutes max. It seems like no matter what he finishes, super fast. Most of the time, we end up doing it more than once for me. Good for him. I wonder if you guys have any tips for me to take to him. This is still a fairly new relationship of 4 months, but I was hoping it was going to get better. Thanks! Exclamation point. And a BBN knows how to pronounce that word, exclamation point. That's a throwback to a previous episode of Verbal Graffiti. Okay, enough inside VG. Let's get verbal. Yeah. All right. You're not alone. A lot of guys, they bust early. Now, it's oddly enough to me, man, I bust early when I'm by myself using my hand, me and Mr. Perfect. When I'm with a babe occasionally, whenever that does happen, I am able to last long. But you're looking at this. You need to look in the mirror. See, this isn't so much about your man. This is about you, because he is who he is. His makeup, his genetics, his biology, his anatomy, your lover, that's who he is. All right? He's a 3-minute super soaker. Now, he was that before he met you, and he will be that after you break up with him and find a guy who could last longer than 3 minutes. The problem with this scenario is he's a 3-minute super soaker, but you, his lady, his babe, you need an entire episode of Friends to get your orgasm. So there's a dead man's zone. What's that? Okay, World War I, you had the trenches, right? There was the good guy's trench, the bad guy trench, and then in between those trenches was no man's land. Okay, no man's land. Yes, a little history lesson there. So You have 27 minutes of no man land for you to get off, right? Like he's, you know, you're 30 minutes apart. He gets 3 minutes, dies, and you need to, he's 27 minutes away from you. How do we shorten that gap so that you guys can, you know, boom and fireworks and artillery and all that shit go off? He is who he is. You gotta change who you are. And now let me tell you how to do that. Now, I don't know. You didn't send in any photos of yourself. None of you ever do on Reddit. You need to become, you need to morph whoever you are now. And let's just assume you're an attractive babe. Let's say, yeah, well, even if you're not. You, as the lady with a guy who gets off very quickly, too quickly to satisfy you, you need to morph yourself into Miss Piggy. That way he can last longer. Because you got to become so repulsive that he can barely keep his penis up while inserted inside of you. And now let's morph you into Miss Piggy. How do we do that? B-Man, how do I morph myself into Miss Piggy so that my man can last longer when he's making love to me? What you need to do, change your diet, all right? I'm going to give you a 4-month, 120-day diet to change whoever you are now into a grotesque-looking human being. One, we got to change your diet. So you need to gain, let's see, 4 months. What's a healthy weight gain in 4 months? Okay, you need to gain 30 pounds in the next 120 days. And not just a regular 30 pounds. You need to gain 30 pounds of corn syrup, right? 30 pounds of just pure fat, cottage cheese, dimples, just grotesque, the unhealthiest fat of all time. We need to put that into your belly and your thighs and your butt cheek and your little gobbler neck. So start your day off every day for the next 120 days. I want you for breakfast to have an entire box of Fruit Loops with whole milk. And I want you to wash that down with a what's the large size at Starbucks? Whatever the largest, the grande, whatever the large size is at Starbucks. The B-Man, I don't know because I go to local cafes because I care about the mom and pop shops. And I'm not going to give to those major corporations like Starbucks and Dunkin', so I don't know the size names. All right. Back to our babe's diet. Yeah, I want you to wash down the Fruit Loops with a Starbucks caramel brulee frappuccino with 3 pumps of caramel and all the sugar and whipped cream you can put on the top of that. That's your breakfast, 7:30, 11 a.m. I want you to have a snack. So I want you to have a Nutter Butter bar and wash that down with a Sprite. And then for lunch at 1 p.m., the B-Man wants you to have a chicken salad that is drenched with ranch dressing. Like drenched so much that the leaf ceases to be a leaf. It's so soft, it like shrivels up because there's so much wetness from the ranch dressing. And it's almost, there's so much dressing that it's almost a dipping sauce. And also, I want you to wash that down with a Sprite. At 3 p.m., I want you to have a mid-afternoon snack. I want you to have, what is a B-meal? Okay, a bag of Lay's potato chips, not the small one, not the large family size one, those in-between size ones that you can get at the gas station. Get one of those. Again, wash that down with a Sprite. 4 p.m., make yourself a coffee at home and put a bunch of cream and Splenda and sugar and make it completely unhealthy. Have that for dinner. For dinner, 6:30 p.m., I want you to eat fried chicken with stovetop stuffing. And again, you're washing that down with a can of Sprite. At 9:30 p.m., I want you to eat a half pint of Friendly's chocolate ice cream, and then when you go to bed, have two chocolate chip cookies, and then when you wake up at 2 a.m. to use the restroom, I want you to chug from your 2-liter bottle of Sprite, all right? And do that every day. Fruit Loops, ranch soaked salads, fried chicken, at least 4 Sprites per day, potato chips, Nutter Butters, chocolate chip cookies, Lay's potato chips, whatever flavor you like. Do that for 120 days, no exercise, okay? If you have an Apple Watch, I want you to have fewer than 2,000 steps per day for the next 120 days. Refrain from exercise at all. And next time you're making love with your boy toy, I don't even want you to be on top, be missionary, so you're not moving at all. Again, I want you, after these 120 days, to be out of breath going up a high stairwell, all right? A steep stairwell, one floor, should put you out of breath and sweating and making your armpits stink. Speaking of armpits stinking, that's your diet. Now let's talk about the rest of your body. I want you to brush your teeth once every 3 days. You're not allowed to use mouthwash, Listerine, and dump it out. You're not using it for the next 4 months. I want you to not comb your hair. Again, maybe once a week maximum. Take one shower per week. Before you go to bed each night, I want you to take a little bit of bacon grease, right? Because just think about Miss Piggy. She's a pig. So take some bacon grease, wipe it on your face as like a facializer, whatever the fuck you call that. And then you go to bed. Don't shave your pubic hair for the next 120 days. Again, 120 day diet. We're morphing you into Miss Piggy. And I'm not just talking about this pubic hair. I'm also talking about your butt pubic hair. So if you have some pubes that kind of are around your butthole orifice, don't shave those. Don't wax those. Let it all out. Grow out your armpit hair. Do not shave your legs. I want you to become, or at least look like, a modern day annoying as fuck third, fourth wave feminist. I want you to listen while the two of you are together, you and your boy toy, who comes very, very quickly, too quickly for you. I want the two of you, I want you to make him listen to an audiobook version of the Communist Manifesto as you're driving together to Starbucks to get basically that milkshake that's 1,200 calories. And when you're right when it gets hot and heavy, but each time I want you to go to YouTube and turn on a laugh track of Kamala Harris. The interviews where she was laughing, turn that on, because that will turn your boy toy, and that will make him soft and that'll make him last longer. And also on your walls of your bedroom or wherever it is you two of you make love for 3 minutes maximum, I want you to put out posters of Whoopi Goldberg and Joanne Barr and all the hosts from MSNBC. It's a brutal looking bunch, so that might help your boy toy last longer. So again, after this 120 days, you should be such a disgusting human being that people might think of you as Miss Piggy. And if you become the person you are now, if you're able to become a real life version of Miss Piggy in the next 120 days, that might be enough to make your boy toy last longer than 3 minutes when the two of you are in bed. You're welcome. Let's go look at some photos. You see this nice navy blue vest, sweater, hoodie thing? I got this as a gift this evening. Again, I am recording this episode 94 segment two on Christmas Eve when I should be with my family. But again, I am a workaholic, so here I am in front of the camera being the attention whore that I am. 304, I'll give it up for anybody as long as there's a camera and some jokes to be said. Nothing, you know, physical going on. Anyway, got this as a gift from my Aunt Mary. So to you, Aunt Mary, if you are listening or watching, thank you very much for the gift. It is very appreciated. I will wear this quite frequently in the near future, the upcoming months, because it is frigid here. But we're not here to talk about the weather. Something about this vest I noticed. It still has the tag, right? This hoodie still has the tag on it, but it has my Aunt Mary left the tag on, but she ripped off the price tag that actually says the price, which is the proper way to give a gift. That is, I don't know. Yeah, it's a proper, if you're a well-mannered person, if you were raised well, you leave the tag on, but you pull off or you put a pen over the price so that whoever is getting the gift can't see how much you paid for the gift. B-Man, I'm a bit of a scoundrel. I was raised well, but a bit of a black sheep. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, I want everybody to know that I am not cheap. And I project that onto others that I love and am friendly with, because I am frugal. I am a cheap fuck. I am the cheapest person you might ever meet. I'm never, when I'm out drinking with the boys, the neighborhood, Ford Life, I never offer to buy the first round. I'm always like round three or four, and I'm kind of hoping that either everyone gets drunk enough where they lose track of who is buying rounds, or that we leave before we get to the round that I have to pay for. I know it's a personality flaw. I am working on it. But if you are a cheap fuck, and I am, it's in you. It's in you, and you really need to work on that to not be a cheap fuck. You're either a cheap fuck or you're not. There's not very many people that transform from cheap fuck to baller. Now, I bring this all up because when I give a gift, I leave the tag on the gift and I also leave the price tag, because it more so than the gift, I want the person I'm giving the gift to know how much I spent on their gift, because that number, right, the whatever dollar amount that is, that's how much I care about you. If it's under $25, I don't give a fuck about you. If it's over $100, you're day one. I ride or die with you. I will lie for you under oath, no matter what you did, as long as it doesn't involve children. Anything, even if you murder somebody, I will lie for you under oath, because you're a good man, a good lady, a good babe, and there's probably a good reason why you committed homicide. Hopefully you didn't torture the person beforehand. But yeah, I always let people know how much I spent on the gift. Oddly enough, actually, I am anti-gift card, because there's no thought to that. But there is, now that I think about this, when you do give somebody a gift card, they know exactly how much you spent on them. So it's a non-thoughtful gift, which I despise, but it is also, you are like, hey, here's a $25 gift card from Amazon or whatever, Starbucks. That's how much I care about you. So maybe I should change my stance on the gift card. Maybe if it's more specific, a gift card than Amazon or Starbucks, if it's a more... if it's a store or an outlet that is very specific to you, if there's a place that you shop, a coffee shop or whatever it is, if it's very specific and not just a broad Amazon where you can buy anything with it, yeah, maybe I am pro gift card. I'm going to have to do some soul searching more soul searching before I talk about my stance on gift cards on verbal graffiti. So definitely I am pro. Let everybody know how much you spent on the gift. And I'm so petty. The B-man, I am so petty that when I give you the gift that has the price tag still on the gift, I'll look at you while you're opening the gift, opening the box, the wrapping paper, and as you're looking at it, I am paying close attention, because I'll make sure that you see the tag, and I'll kind of nudge you. Hey, look at the tag. Look at the tag. See how much I spent on you. See that teddy bear? That's not just any teddy bear. That's a $76.99 teddy bear. Make sure you look at that price tag. You should probably take that price tag off, put it in a little frame, and put it above your bed just so you can always think about the B-man and how not cheap I am. All right, that's enough with gifts. Let's keep it moving. Episode 94, segment 2. Holiday seasons is for loving, but it's also heartbreaking as well. So let's get to the subreddit for heartbreak. I am absolutely terrified I will never feel love again. I had it once. Should have held on to it. I was absolutely head over heels in love. I thought he was my best friend and I had everything. And then he cheated on me. There's a lot more to it, but it took me the better part of 2 years in moving towns to get over it. Are you over it? I just haven't met anyone since that I've felt a connection with, really. I feel like I cannot catch feelings for anyone, and I'm completely numb. And more to that, I feel completely unlovable. I just don't see why anyone would actually want to be with me, but I cry so badly. I just want to be excited to check my phone, but I feel nothing of all of the time. I've tried dating apps, and I just feel so numb. I would give anything to love someone and be loved back, and I'm just so absolutely terrified it won't ever happen again. I'm there with you. I'm there. I too am unlovable. The B-man, my entire life, I have never kissed somebody on New Year's Eve when the ball drops and the clock strikes midnight. Nobody. I'm 0 for 40. So I'm there with you with that fear of being unlovable. Now, there is this thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a myth. Maybe it's a conspiracy theory. It's called a women's intuition, or as I like to call it, babe's intuition. I think you need to trust what your intuition is telling you, your women's intuition, because that's what you are, a woman, a babe, a lady, a XY chromosome, I think. XY is the female, or... All right, I don't know anything about science, but you're a babe. You got tits, you got ass, you got vagina, and nobody wants any of them. Right, you get that feeling you have that you are unlovable, that there is not a guy that you'll ever be head over heels with ever again, that there'll never be a guy who will want to cuddle up with you after work when it's chilly out and you got your vest on and you have the fireplace going and you're sharing hot cocoa and you're making s'mores and the popcorn's popping from the kitchen. You'll never have that ever again. You'll never say, I love you. And hear those three words back again. That woman's intuition that is telling you that is absolutely correct. You are unlovable, right? You are unlovable. 2 years since this man cheated on you, right? 2 years. You've been on the dating apps. I am also on the dating apps. You have moved towns. I have also moved towns, kind of. I don't have love. You don't have love. You will be better off when you accept your fate that you are unlovable and that you will live the rest of your life alone. You will eat your meals, your dinners. You will have TV dinners while watching Mr. Beast YouTube videos alone because you are unlovable and nobody wants to be your partner. All right, there is no guy out there who will hold your hand in public. There is no guy who, when you have that talk, the talk of exclusivity, is that how you pronounce it? You're exclusive. Exclusivity? Exclusive? Are the two of us exclusive? No, he's gonna backtrack. He's gonna try to finagle his way, bob and weave his way out of that conversation. There's no guy out there in this world that's even willing to be your side, that's willing to have you be his side piece. Now, there might be some men, some scoundrels among us that are willing to pipe you down post midnight, but they're always gonna make you leave before the sun rises because they don't want anybody to know that he's associated with an unlovable, and that's who you are. You're an unlovable. So the sooner you accept this fate, the less stress you will have on your shoulders, the more clear-minded, clear-headed you will be, and you could focus on other aspects of your life and thrive at those. And to be man, and all of us here at Verbal Graffiti, we hope you thrive in all your other aspects of life other than love, because there's nothing me or anyone here at Verbal Graffiti can do about that, because you, as you know, your feminine intuition tells you are unlovable. So actually, you know, now that I think about it just a little bit, the B-man, I'm thinking, there's one thing you can do. There's one thing you can do to regain love. And that we usually here at Verbal Graffiti don't advise looking in the rearview mirror. We are very look forward, because the past is filled with failure and utter disgrace and shame. But maybe you need, if you're this desperate for love, maybe you need to go back to your ex and ask for love again. Get down on your knees and beg for reconciliation from your ex-lover who cheated on your ass. Now, people are going to say, no. You cannot go back to your ex who cheated on you. I say, is it really the worst of the two scenarios? We have two scenarios. One, scenario one, you're an unlovable fuck who has to eat TV dinners alone, and you're just a loner, and everyone's looking at you like, what's wrong with that babe? Why is he so unlovable? Or you're in love with a cheater. Now, let's go through the scenarios. All right, yeah, so you're alone. We already went through everything. You're alone. But let's say you go back to your lover, and then you're able to re-grasp love once again that you once had with this one guy who tends, he likes to stray. He's a stray cat. He likes to find some strains. So, all right. I think go back to your ex-lover, right? Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Right? You're going to be in love, right? But it's better to be in love and have, you know, somebody's arm around you than to have to go to all these formal events, right? Like Christmas Eve dinner, church on Easter, weddings, birthdays, anniversaries. Yeah, your ex, soon to be current boyfriend, he's going to have his arm around you. You're all going to be kissy-kissy with him. And everyone in your family and your friend group and your coworkers who know about the two of yours, your past, they're going to sneer at you and talk shit. But better that than to look down at your phone and never see it, and see nothing, just numbness, right? It's better to have the sneers and be able to look down at your phone and see a text from somebody you love, even if he is a cheater, right? It's better to be with the cheater at a wedding than to be there alone, you know, at the bar, open bar, sipping your whiskey sour, and you have your nice dress on, and you have a bit of a shawl over to try to hide some of your heavysetness and to hide your angles, and you're wearing your heels, but you don't have to take them off because no one wants to dance with you, and you're watching everyone who's in lovey-dovey, they're dancing and having a great time, and you're just in the corner sipping your whiskey sour, thinking, What could have been if my boyfriend wasn't a cheating whore? 304. And then the only time you get to dance is when your two cousins, who you're not really friends with, but but they take pity on you, so they have to drag you on the dance floor, and you're doing like a three-way type of dance, and you actually start having some fun. Like, all right, I'm getting in the groove, like the dance, and you're into it, and then boom, the DJ hits you with a slow dance, and you just have to do that slow walk back to the wall and sip your whiskey sour because you don't have a lover to do a slow dance with. So it's better to be there with your ex-lover, right, who may cheat on you afterwards, but at least you have somebody to share those moments with. And what's that saying? That don't let perfect get in the way of good. So better to be in love with a guy who loves a pussy other than your own than to shun that away and be alone all the time. Like, honestly, if he's cheating on you, as long as he's not doing it in your bedroom or when you're around, like, is it really that much of a mortal sin? Like, you're unlovable. There's nobody else in this world who wants or is willing or to even entertain the possibility of being in love with you. So it's either, these are your choices. You're unlovable or you get love with a guy who likes a little pussy on the side, right? Like, I think that the latter is the more enjoyable life. So don't let perfect get in the way of good. Go back, ask for reconciliation from your ex, right? When he cheats on you, just look away. Play dumb, like the wife in The Sopranos. Let's play dumb. Oh, where do we get all that money? This nice house in Jersey. Where's this all coming from? I don't know. It's just, I work for the city. I'm a dump truck. Just play dumb. It's better to play dumb and have some love, even if it is tenuous, than to be unlovable alone all the time. All right. Hope that helps you out. And, hope you get back with your cheater. All right, we're going to continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. We are on page 55, about halfway down. We will read two pages together if you are, if you are reading along with us. Alan sat inside the comfortably furnished mobile home, sipping a beer and waiting for Stella to come back from the other room where she was changing. He mused somewhat over the step he was taking and for a moment or two felt a sense of remorse about cheating on Pamela. Yet deep inside he knew that he wanted Stella badly and decided to ignore his troubled conscience. He leaned back on the convertible sofa and glanced around at his surroundings. There were two rooms, a living room kitchen and a second room separated by a sliding door which served as the bedroom dressing area. There were a green pile of rugs on the floor and green and white pinstripe upholstery on chairs and sofa. Huge pillows were strewn everywhere. It was narrow, but quite pleasant and comfortable. Alan took a long swallow of scotch and shivered slightly as the potent liquid slid down his throat. He felt warm and mellow, a million miles away from his troubles. He heard the door to the other room open and Stella entered the room. She was dressed in a tightly clinging blue silk kimono that was tied loosely to reveal the tantalizing cleft of her proud, set breasts. The silk robe hung on her body so that it is like a loose second skin, accentuating every credible curve of her sleek body, and she was barefoot. At the sight of her, Alan began to grow warmly aroused again, and his cock pounded like a drum. "It's nice to get out of the uniform," she said, stretchingly lazily. "I think I'll pour myself a drink and catch up with you." She was in the kitchen area and poured some scotch into an ice-filled tumbler. "Cheers," she said airily. "Here's to us." They clinked glasses and both took a long drink of the strong liquid. She sat next to him on the sofa, her body lightly grazing his. Alan felt a sudden rush of desire surge through him. He took another swallow of his drink and tried to relax. There was a heavy silence in the room as each waited for their first move. Stella leaned against him, sighing deeply, feeling mellow and loose after a couple swallows of her drink. Go suck a fat one.